Okay.
today we are learning Perek Chaf Beis, the 22nd chapter of the Tiferes Yisrael. We've been learning last we moved as we're talking about the giving of the Torah. We moved on to Moshe Rabbeinu, a pretty important person when it comes to the giving of the Torah, and last week we talked about the contrast between Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam HaRasha. And every Moshe has his certain, the contrasting figures. And Bilam is one which Chazal contrast with Moshe Rabbeinu as the parallel, so to speak, Navi amongst the nations of the world. Today, this perek is going to deal with a very famous antagonist of Moshe Rabbeinu, Korach. Korach. Korach v'Adosoi. So the Maral, in approaching this issue of Korach v'Adosai, first establishes a very clear and straightforward guideline for what the machlokes of Korach was, and then he speaks a little bit about the detail of the specific complaints which Chazal attribute. The specific complaints which Chazal attribute to Korach, or issues which Chazal claims that Korach raised against Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's first look a little bit at the pasuk, at the verse, and how Korach expresses himself as he objects to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. They ganged up Moshe Rabbeinu, Korach and his courts. Right, they ganged up against Moshe and Aaron. And Vayemru Aleim, and they said to them, Rav Lochem, you've taken much. Ki cholo eido kulam kedoshim uvesoichem Hashem. Because the community, all of them, the community as a whole, they are all holy, they are all sacred, and Hashem is in their midst. Umadua tisnasu al kal Hashem. So why do you lift yourselves up over the community of Hashem? They complained that Moshe Rabbeinu should not be different than anybody else. Rashi says on this verse, "Kulam kedoshim, kulam shamu devarim b'sinai mipi agvura." They all heard words from Hashem directly at Har Sinai. So why are you singling yourself out? Why are you and Aaron singling yourselves out to be different than everybody else? That was the complaint of Korach. Okay, so now let's remind ourselves. Let's take a step back to remind ourselves about where we were, about how we got to this thing of Moshe Rabbeinu. We said, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu not give the Torah to Avram Avinu? Why didn't he give it to Avram Avinu? Why, once the first Jew comes on the scene, give him the Torah. Right? So the Maral explained, the idea was that the Torah was meant for Klal Yisrael, for the totality of the Jewish people. For the community of the Jewish people. Torah is given to the klal, Torah is not given to the prat. Torah is given to the whole, it's not given to the part. And Avram Avinu is a part. He's a part of Klal Yisrael. Avram Avinu was, he lived on this world for 175 years, and then he died. And Avram Avinu isn't here anymore. Oh, we can invoke the merit of Avram, of course. And we can say, in fact, that their merit exists forever. Right? Tzidkasam emedes lo'ad. Their righteousness stands forever. But on the other hand, Avram was an individual. He came and he went. So the Torah could only be given once you have an entity called Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. And the entity called Klal Yisrael was forged at Yetzias Mitzrayim. There, you have the community coming into being. The community is not just Yankel, Shmer, Chaim, and Beryl, right? The 600,000 people with individual names who were there, because they also don't last forever. The community is the entity called the Jewish people. And the Jewish people is always there. When you speak about a klal, it's always there. Right? L'havdil el falfi abdolus, the Coca-Cola company, is the same Coca-Cola company that it was 100 years ago when it was making this beverage. Right? The recipe might be different. The shareholders are different. The officers of the company are different. The employees of the company are different. The factories that the company uses are different. But it's the same company. The klal, the corporate entity, the totality, is something which once it's there, it exists. It exists as long as there's something that somehow subscribes as part of it. It exists. The pratim, the details change. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu only gave the Torah once there was something called Klal Yisrael. So therefore, it waited for this point in time. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu waits for there to be something called Klal Yisrael in order to introduce Torah. And now what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu singles himself, quote unquote, in the words of Korach, singles himself out from the rest of the Jewish people. Korach argues Klal. If Torah is meant for the Klal, and you see, because remember, as we learned before, and as we discussed, you knew before, and as we discussed in a little bit more detail several weeks ago, the two first commandments, Anoichi and Le'yelecha, we don't even rely on Moshe Rabbeinu for. I am Hashem, your God, you should not have other gods. We don't rely on Moshe Rabbeinu for. Torah, Tzivalonu Moshe, the Gemara says at the end of Makkos. Torah is 611. 611 commandments Moshe Rabbeinu gave us. The 613 commandments of the Torah are completed by two that we heard directly. Anoichi and Le'yilecha. And as we explained then, hey, look at it. Anoichi is Hashem speaking in the first person to the Jewish people. Starting at the third commandment is Le'sisa Hashem, Hashem Le'kech L'shav, somebody speaking about Hashem, rather than Hashem speaking himself. Don't have other gods in my presence. That's the second commandment. Starting at the third, it's somebody else talking. So, says Korach, look, the Torah is for Klal Yisrael, isn't it? Yes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, parts of the Torah, directly to Klal Yisrael. Directly to Klal Yisrael. So what are you doing, Moshe Rabbeinu? How are you doing? How are you singling yourself out? Ki chol ha'eda kulam kedoshim uv'seicham Hashem. U'madu atisnasu al kal Hashem. Why are you lifting yourself up over the community of Hashem? Now on the other hand, so that's what we learned several weeks ago. On the other hand, a couple of weeks ago, we learned about, so but HaKadosh Baruch Hu did give the Torah specifically through Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was different than everybody else. Moshe Rabbeinu was miyuchad. Moshe Rabbeinu was muvdal. He was in a certain way separate and apart from the normal ways of the world, and therefore separate and apart from the normal ways of the Jewish people. And the Torah is separate and apart from the normal ways of the world. The Torah is above and beyond. And therefore, he said it's appropriate that something which is muvdal should be given through somebody who is muvdal. But Korach challenged that. That's the point that Korach is disturbed by. Why? If this is a Torah for all of the Jewish people, should you in any which way be singled out? Should you in any which way be different? Ki chaleida kulam kedoshim uv'seicham Hashem, u'madu atisnasu al kal Hashem. That's what Korach says. Okay, so that's step one in our discussion. But this step is the step of pshuto shel mikra, the simple pshat in the pasuk. Right now, in light of what we learned in the Maral about the Klal and about Moshe Rabbeinu, so we put some meat on it. Chazal put other words into the argument of Korach v'Hadassah, right? And these words start with the smichus haparshios, the juxtaposition between the story of Korach and what comes immediately before it. What comes immediately before the story of Korach at the end of Parsha Shlach is the Parsha of Tzitzis that we read every day, morning and night. The Parsha of Tzitzis, which tells us to put these fringes on the corner of our garments, including a psil tcheles, including a blue thread. So the Korach, say Chazal, came to Moshe Rabbeinu with a shayla. He said, talis shekula tcheles. If you have a talis, where the entire garment is made out of blue wool, do you have to put blue fringes on it? That was Korach's shayla. And then, say Chazal, Korach also had another shayla. What was his other shayla? So our shayla was that if you had a house which was full of svarim, full of sifrei Torah, do you have to put a mezuzah on the doorpost? The argument in both cases, in the first case, it says, what? If a regular talis, a single strand of blue will pater it, so how much, when you have a whole garment of blue, you're going to need a single strand. Give me a break. If a regular house, two paragraphs of Shema, can free it, can help it with a mezuzah, when the whole house is filled with scrolls after scrolls, right, with which have in them hundreds of paragraphs of the Torah, it needs a mezuzah. Those were the questions which they did. Okay, so tzitzis, you know, comes right next to it. That I understand. Maybe you'll put them together, but still, why of all things should Kairach be arguing tzitzis? And this question. And mezuzah doesn't even say right next to it. So where do we get this thing of mezuzah that they're arguing about mezuzah? These are some of the questions which the Maral says to try to understand it. Now, of course, Nusa, somebody say, at first glance, what's the comparison between them? Forget the details of tzitzis, mezuzah, but the essential question, yeah. That's right. Exactly. It's the same argument of ki chalaida kulam kedoshim umadu atisnasu. If everybody is holy, why do you have to single yourself out as the holy one? If everything is blue, why would you need a separate strand that would be blue? If everything is the words of Torah, then why do you need to put those two specific parshiyos of Torah on the doorpost? So again, that's poshut pshat. That's the simple meaning of the comparison between the two of them. Of the comparison between these two things. However, you know, the question remains, what tzitzis and mezuzah, you know, like what's here? And of course, to really understand the core of what was the machloikas, what was really the machloikas of Kairach. So I want to some degree, maybe I'm not going to follow exactly the same order that the Maharal uses to answer his question, to explain things over here. Want to maybe take some of what he says later and you know load it here forward and proceed to try to understand. First of all, what the Maharal says, which is a very poshut, beautiful insight, is that tzitzis is about ma'aseh. It's about actions. L'man tizkeru v'asisem es kol mitzvaysai. Right? You do the tzitzis. By looking at the tzitzis, you'll remember to perform all of the mitzvahs that I've instructed you. Tzitzis is a mitzvah, which we say to some degree is shokul, is balancing, equal to all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. Because somehow, right, we have the 600... Right, tzitzis is the numerical value of the word tzitzis is 600 plus. You have on each corner you have five knots and eight strings. And, you know, that gives you your 613. But whatever the cheshbon, l'man tizkeru v'asisem es kol mitzvaysai. Tzitzis is a mitzvah. It's an action, and it somehow recalls all the other actions. Mezuzah is the parshiyos of the Torah. Mezuzah, the parshiyos of the Torah. It's limud. It's learning. And so, basically, what the Maharal says is that Korach, as we know, had a double attack. We know that he was attacking both the leadership of Moshe and the leadership of Aaron. Right? Aaron was the one, in fact, who had to face off with the 250 cohorts of Korach who were all trying to bring the Ketores. Aaron is Avoda. Aaron is worship. Aaron is the Kayan. Aaron is Masa. And Moshe is Limud. Moshe Rabbeinu was Tiret Sifulanu Moshe. So therefore, those are the two fronts of the battle of Kairach. One is the front of the tzitzis, and one is the front of the mezuzah. Yes, it's true, it doesn't say mezuzah anywhere in this parsha, or really, really near this parsha. It doesn't say it there. But what Chazal are doing, you know, starting with the tzitzis thing, which is right next to it, and part of the parsha, which is the argument of Kairach, is we're seeing the same kind of a thematic issue. Why should Aaron be singled out to serve Hashem when all of the community is Kaddish? Why should Moshe Rabbeinu be singled out to learn and to communicate the Torah when all of the community somehow benefited from the prophecy of the learning that was there originally? It's on these two fronts. And of course, as Maral says, Korach goofed, right? Because he asked the Shiloh, which to him was ridiculous. Of course, you don't need to put a string of tzitzis on a garment of tchelos. Of course, you don't have to put a mezuzah on the door of a Sefer Torah depot. However, the truth is that you do have to. You do have to. Right? Kerach asked the Shaila, thinking the answer was self-evident, and he was wrong. The answer is you do have to put a tzitzis on the corner of a garment of tchelis. You do have to do so. So the question is why? The question is what, you know, what he's seeing here. Why is this thing the case? Says the Maral. Let's start with tzitzis. Tamat tchelis biaru chazal. The reasoning of tchelis chazal explained nishat tchelis daima lekise hakovet. Because tchelis ultimately is like the kise hakovet. Right? We know the throne of Hashem. Right? Hashem's throne came with a footstool. Right? We know what the footstool looked like. We don't have descriptions of people talking about the throne. We know what the footstool looked like, right? Kol Yisrael saw, v'tachas raglov kemase livnas hasapir. They saw it was like a sapphire brick. Sapphire is tcheles, no blue. Okay. Right? It's blue like the tcheles. The kisei hakavod, the throne of honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever that means, we'll talk about it a little bit more, right? Is tcheles, is blue. Right, Chazal say tchelis is like the blue of the wool, reminds you of the blue of the sea, which reminds you of the blue of the sky, which is like the blue of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne. And so somehow you ride this, you know, through all these channels, that you remember that Hashem, looking at his Kisei HaKavod, remembers us down here. That's why Rashi says in one of the places in Kulin, I think, where the Gemara brings it. So tchelis is like the Kisei HaKavod. It's like the Kisei HaKavod. So, first of all, as follows. Why would this be the way to bring us to action? As I said to you, the way the Maral divides it up is that the tcheles, the tzitzis, is corresponding to Aron. It's the realm of action. And we say that because tzitzis, the pasuk says, brings you to action. But then Chazal say that when you look at the tcheles, you remember the kisei covered the throne of Hashem's glory, and that brings you to action. Why is that? Why does the throne of Hashem's glory remind you or bring you to action? Explains the Maral. Throne equals Malchus. Throne equals Malchus. The throne is the term which is used for the Malchus. Remember what we had in the Parsha a couple of weeks ago. When Paro appointed Yosef as his viceroy, what did he say? Rak hakisei egdal mimecha, right? Only the throne I will make greater than you. In other words, I'm still the king. I'm still the king. The throne represents the kingdom. And he says, look, you know, you can ask why it's specifically the throne of all things that's supposed to somehow represent the kingdom. I can demonstrate it to you. I show you from these verses that the throne represents the kingdom. Exactly why, of all things, says the Maral, that's a side, that's a mystical secret that I can't explain to you altogether why that's the case. Now, you can only wonder the things that he's not explaining to us. Okay, but this is what he says. The throne represents the Malchus. And Malchus is action. Why is Malchus action? Malchus is what motivates action. We say, for instance, the Mishnah says, every day in Kriyat Shema we say two paragraphs. The first paragraph is Shema, the second paragraph is Vahayim Shemaya. The first one is Kabbalas O Malchus Shemayim, accepting upon ourselves Hashem as the King. And the second one is Kabbalas O Mitzvahs, accepting upon ourselves what to do. Vahayim Shemaya Tishmu El Mitzvahisai, listen to my mitzvahs, if you listen to my mitzvahs. The Chazal have this expression, right? Kibaltem Malchusi, Malchusi Kablu Gezeiraisa. You accept me as king, now accept my decrees. The king has the power to instruct, to command, to enforce. And so, when we recognize, when we remember the throne of Hashem's kingdom, the effect is, we say, okay, now what are we supposed to do as a result? If he is our king, then we have certain responsibilities to him as a result of that. Tell me now, what am I supposed to do? That's the connection between the Malchus, between the kingdom, and Maisa, between the Kisei, between the throne of the Kisei HaKavod and the action. Now, so why, however, is this something, if that's the case, let the whole Talus, which is Talus, also remind you of it. But the thing is that we have a rule with kings. And the rule with kings is that kings aren't a klal. Kings are a prat. There's one king. There's one king. If there's one thing that we've been worried about since the beginning of time, almost, is that there's one king. Remember, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the fourth day of creation, he created the sun and the moon to rule over the day and over the night. They were rulers. They were, like, so to speak, like kings. So what happened? The moon came and complained, you can't have two kings wearing the same crown. There has to be one king. So Hashem said, okay, the sun will be the king. Right? It's a good point. The sun will be the king. Chazal have an expression, right? David HaMelech, Hashem told him that he was supposed to die on Shabbos. Right? So David HaMelech didn't want to die on Shabbos. He says, you know, maybe I can die on Friday. Can't. Yeah, Hashem said, I'm not taking you away a day earlier. Because, you know, one day of you, right, I would take one day of your serving me over all the korbanos that Shlomo HaMelech will bring in the Beis HaMikdash, right? Even though this holds up to bring in the Beis HaMikdash, I'd rather have you. I'm not taking you a day earlier. So David HaMelech says, okay, so then take me on Sunday. Take me a day later. Hashem said, I can't. Why? Because Shlomo HaMelech is supposed to become king on this date. And I can't leave you around. Because a kingdom can't overlap another kingdom a hair's breadth. There ain't no such thing as two kings, right? You know, the dramatic thing on inauguration day of the President of the United States is how the past president disappears, right? He doesn't sit there, you know, he disappears, he drives away. Ein malchus negas b'chaverta. Right? One kingdom can't touch another. There has to be a clear hierarchy. There has to be a clear line of authority when it comes to Malchus. It's not something which you speak about a klal. The king does have to be separate. Kairach, who was saying, no, let it just be one big thing. But look at the kisei itself. Look at the throne itself. The throne is distinct. Rak hakisei egdal mimeka, right? That's what Paray said to Yosef. You're going to be in charge of so many things here in this country, but everybody's going to have to understand that there's one king. There's going to have to understand that there's one king. I can deputize you, but they have to understand that there's one king. Malchus is going to be unique. And it's a fascinating thing. Because on the one hand, right, this is where we get to the core of this irony that we have here, which is Torah is given to Klal Yisrael. But on the other hand, the argument is that there has to be a Moshe Rabbeinu, there has to be an Aaron HaKohen, someone who's separate from Klal Yisrael. But this person who's separate from Klal Yisrael is not really separate from Klal Yisrael. I want to reference something that the Maral himself says, And is an important thing to, you know, to view this perspective. In Perek Beis of Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Gamliel, in the second Mishnah, says, Kol ha'amelim im ha-tzibur, all those who toil with the tzibur, yu ha'amelim imoim l'shem shamayim, they should toil with them for the sake of heaven. Shezchus ha'voisa misayatan, because the merit of their forefathers, of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, will help them, their righteousness stands forever, and I will consider it as if you've done it. That's what it says. Kol ha'melim im ha-tzibur. And then the next Mishnah says as follows. Hevu zehirim b'roshos. Be very careful when you approach the governing authorities. Why? Shein mekarven leilu adam ela l'tzairach atzman. When they're nice to somebody, it's self-serving. They look like they're friends when they need you. But then they spit you out. Right? Ein oidim leilu adam b'shas tachi. When you need them, they're not there for you. So the Maral explains that these two statements are speaking about two different paradigms of leadership. Our paradigm of leadership is ha'melim imatzibur yu'amelim imayim l'shem shamayim. The king is altogether not in it for himself. He's doing it for the sake of heaven. He's melting in to Klal Yisrael. That's how he explains beautifully. What's the idea? Oh, the merit of Avram will help him and the righteousness stands forever. He says exactly this same point which we talked about a little bit earlier. If you are King George, the individual, and you're standing here now, and you're into what will fill your coffers for yourself, your ego trip, your lust trip, your whatever it is that you're looking for here as the king in your power trip generally, then it's you. And you are a specific point in time, a specific point in space. That's who you are. And you stand alone as the one who's ruling over the kingdom. However, if what you're about is working for the klal, if it's not for you, if you see yourself as really doing everything which you're doing, occupying the position which you're occupying, yes, sitting on a throne, but the throne of the Jewish people, you see yourself doing it for them as part of them, then it's not you, a single point in time, a single point in space. Instead, you are melting yourself into the Jewish people. And if you're melting yourself into the Jewish people, you know who you're standing shoulder to shoulder with? Not only the Jewish people all horizontally across the globe, but also vertically through history. You also have Avram Avinu standing next to you because he was also part of Klal Yisrael, and Yitzchak and Yaakov. You're not alone. That's the paradigm, the model of Jewish leadership. A melech, we worry about him not becoming arrogant, not becoming indulgent, not too many wives, not too many horses, not too much money, right? When we worry about the king, if the king is going to become, heaven forbid, in any which way self-serving, then he's not the right king. He's not part of the people. To be the king, you've got to be part of the people. And so we say that's what your Esek L'Shem Shamayim should be. But if you go around, you go to the governments, you know what you find? The opposite. You find that governments, unfortunately, generally speaking, are filled with self-serving people. People who seek power. People who seek the goodies that come along with power. And if that's the case, so then that's paradigm B. That's the second paradigm, which is there for leadership. Ours is the melech who's completely, so to speak, absorbed in the people. And at the same time, Saim tosim alecha melech, place, you shall place upon you a king. We learn from that shit, hey, a masay alecha. You should be awestruck from the king. You should be reverent of the king. The king has to be unique, special. Nobody can ride on his horse. Nobody can do it in his wagon. You know, if you go to visit the governor, right? So he loves, they have this great line, right? They say, hi, I want to welcome you to your house. Right? Because they're trying to say, look, the governor's mansion is not, it's not my house, right? It's your house, right? It belongs to the people. I'm an heir to the people. That's a good attitude. If it would only be true, it would be good, right? But right, that's a good attitude, right? We're saying, you know, the person belongs to the people. It's not, this is not about me, right? But on the other hand, the Torah says that the governor's mansion is not your mansion. That the king's house is not your house. The king's house is not your house. His horse is not your horse. His clothes are not your clothes. Right? None of these things. Do you have the right? Do you have the right to share with anybody? Does he have the right to share? Does anybody allowed to use? The king, who's supposed to be given over completely, ibergegeben, as a public servant, not in it for himself, but at the same time, his service requires that he be separate and apart. Separate and apart. That's the way it works with Malchus. There's just one throne. Rak Hakise. There's just one throne, and that has to be separate from anything else. Korach's democratic view of Kol Ha'eda Kulam Kedoshim did away with the need for a leader to that democracy, for someone to be above the rest of them. And that was the great mistake of Korach.
He wasn't suggesting that he become the leader.
So this is the great ambiguity as well of Korach. And this is the great irony of this whole thing. Because ultimately we know that as much as we say Torah has to be given to the klal, and this is the basis of Korach's argument, and the klal is best represented, in fact, at Har Sinai by what? By the Jewish people standing at Har Sinai. Ki ish echad belev echad, like one people with one heart. They weren't individuals in a sense. In a sense, we speak many things about Klal Yisrael has Sinai being individuals, each one hearing it his own way. But on the other way, they were like one person. They were not selfish. They were in it for the group, for Klal Yisrael. And what's Kairach? Kairach is the paradigm of machlokes, of argument. What's the example of an argument not for the sake of heaven that the Mishnah brings? Is Kairach va'adasai. In fact, there's a classic vort which many people have said. The Mishnah says, what's an example of machlokes for the sake of heaven? Hillel and Shammai. What's an example of a machlokes not for the sake of heaven? Kairach and his community. So the question is, Hillel and Shammai argued with each other. Kairach argued with Moshe. It should say, what's a machlokes shelo l'shem Shammai was Kairach versus Moshe and Aaron, like Hillel versus Shammai, right? Why does it say Kairach v'adosai? So of course the simple answer is because the only one who was guilty of Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim was one part of the Machlokes. Moshe was arguing for the sake of heaven. Kairach and his community, that side was Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim. So the Mishnah is not going to say a Machlokes Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim is Kairach and Moshe. Right? When it says L'Shem Shamayim, it's Hillel and Shammai. They were both arguing L'Shem Shamayim. That's the simple teretz. But many say that the idea is because you have to understand that as much as Kairach and his community were standing up to Moshe Rabbeinu, there was machlokes between Kairach and his own community, because that's the way it works. And when you have a group of people who get together for a big putsch, for a big coup d'etat, right, the morning after, they're fighting amongst themselves. Right? When you understand that it's a power grab, the next morning they're fighting amongst themselves. Right? They get together. It happens all the time. It happens in organizational life. You know, this group breaks off and forms their own, you know, forms their own thing. How cohesive do they end up being? Right? Very often, especially when it smells Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim, right afterwards they're fighting amongst themselves because what unified them was fighting. What unified them was fighting. So, you know, now, right, there they had a common enemy. Now we separated from him. Now what are we going to do? So let's find a new enemy, right? So each one does. Kairach v'hadasai. So Kairach's great argument of democracy, as Rashi says, you know where it really came from? If Moshe Rabbeinu had been told by Hashem to appoint Kairach as the Kohen Gadol, you think Kairach would have been arguing? Not only that, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have appointed Kairach as the Nasi instead of Elitzafan ben Uziel, who was a cousin of Kairach, he also wouldn't have been arguing. What happened was he got jealous because none of the power was in his hands. So what's he going to do? He's going to argue the power should be in my hands? No, he becomes a populist. He says, it should be in everybody's hands. It should be nobody. Nobody should be leading the people. So the words of his argument are the words of it should be everybody. Right? But under that argument, we know what was really going on with Kairach. And that's why Kairach, you know, the word Kairach means a split. The word Kairach, Karcha, right? It's like a bald, an empty spot. You tear out something from the middle. Right? Karcha be Israel. Right? That was the nature of what was really going on. So that's how disingenuous his arguments are. But let's speak to his arguments. And forget Kairach, forget his motivations. Let's speak to his arguments. There has to be something called a Melech. And the truth is the same thing is true of Tyra. Although the Ramban doesn't, the Maral doesn't expand upon it here, the same thing is true with Tyra. There has to be a place where the clarity of prophecy comes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu deposited Torah with Moshe Rabbeinu. And he said, no other Navi will arise like him. No other Navi could argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. There has to be a single clear authority. Yes?
You said there has to be a Melech. In the days of Shaul, did not Hashem object to the fact that there should be a king? Wasn't there objection at some time?
Yes. So that's a very good question. The Torah gives a mitzvah about appointing a king. And there's ambiguity in the mitzvah which the Torah gives. The Torah says you'll come to the land and you'll ask for a king. This is how you should appoint a king. So there's a fundamental machlokes, many generational machlokes, about whether the idea was that they were ideally supposed to appoint for themselves a king, like the mitzvah in the Torah, or whether the idea is that the Torah is telling you, just like Le'olein Rachmanson, there's a mitzvah in the Torah about giving a get, a divorce. It's not that the Torah wants a person to give a divorce, but it says, if you're going to give one, if you're going to get divorced, this is how you should do it. So the Torah could be saying, you want to have a king, this is how you should do it. This is how you should do it. And the simple way to say, you know, based on that story in the book of Shmuel, is Hashem wasn't pleased. So evidently, the idea is, if you want to, this is how you should do it. Others understand, no, that it is an ideal. It is an ideal, and the issue that arose there was more that the nature of the kind of a king that the Jewish people were choosing, the kind of a king that the Jewish people wanted. Right? The Drosh HaSaran has a beautiful explanation where he says the idea was that they said we wanted a king to judge us, which means that they were choosing not to be governed by Torah as a pure truth, but instead by a societal ordering. The judgment should come from a societal ordering, like it does in the nature in the kings of the world. Their job is administration. Their job isn't truth. Their job isn't truth. So some understand it. Some understand the king as an ideal. Some understand the king not so much as an ideal. But more to the point, one has to realize that the Jewish people did not lack a structure of singular leadership. The pasuk says in the end of Sefer Dvarim, in the end of the Chumash, "Vayhi Bishurun Melech, Bisasef Rashi Yom Yachad Shifte Yisrael." In Yishurun, which is the Jewish people, there were as a king. When the nation, when the tribes banded together, who was the king? Right. So Rashi says it was Hashem. The Parshonim, many Ramban says, no, Moshe. Moshe had the din of a king. You know, who had the mitzvah to read the Torah to the whole Jewish people at Hakil? Originally, that mitzvah was given to. Was performed by Moshe, by the way, right, which is what he did before he died, and then it was to Yeshua. Yeshua was the next one to do it, and then it would be was the one who sang to whom it was given, and then ultimately it would be done by the Melech. It's a Melech function, but there were leaders of the Jewish people during the period before the Jewish people had their first formal so-called king. There were those who played that role. Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel, the prophet, played that role. That he was the one who was replaced. So, okay, you would say he was a Navi who functioned as a Melech rather than a Melech who did a little prophecy on the side, like David HaMelech, right? But nevertheless, it was there. This idea of a singular authority, a singular leader in this way, was there and very much existed.
Well, with the preference, it could be argued that Hashem maybe preferred a democratic type of the with a leader that was ordained by him?
Of course, it was the leader who was ordained by him. He says, "You, the Melech you should choose should be the one that Hashem chooses." Same to similar, right? Hashem chooses. So they had to look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the nominating committee for the Melech. So that it would be a divinely ordained king, yes. And the idea of democratic in the sense of that it should be somebody that the Tzibur is pleased with, the Gemara is explicit, right? That you don't appoint somebody on the Tzibur until you consult to some degree with the Tzibur, right? You consult some degree with the Tzibur. There has to be some sense of that. But a lot of the differences do end. It's still the king is given, you know, the authority of a monarch. He's given that power of a monarch. And he's supposed to do it all al pi Hashem, and that's why we want him not to be just some self-serving power monger, which is that which made kings, the whole notion of monarchy, become very sour in the eyes of civilization, because we never saw it done right. We only saw the second Mishnah. We never saw the first Mishnah, right? That's what ruined it, right? But in principle, the Melech is supposed to rule. But there has to be someone distinct who singles himself out, and that's part of it. Kairach brings 250 Maktirek Tyrus, and we say, what are you talking about, right? Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Kairach, you know, that's the way of the Ummah Islam. Nature, you know, maybe in the nations of the world they have 100 gods and 100 temples and 100 kohanim and everything else. The Jewish people, who is a single people, they have to be united to some degree, and they're united at the top. The king is the one that somehow brings them together, dedicated to the community, but atop to bring the community together. The person who carries the crown of Torah as well, not the crown of kingdom, the Moshe Rabbeinu also, right? All together, everyone will follow, everyone will hear the prophecies which he communicates to the people. Yes?
Just wondering, does the Maharal speak about the fact that this is like a mashal for the fact that Hashem is one? So we have a klal, but we need to have, I guess, the mashal of one.
The Maharal doesn't speak about it here, but it's, yes, it is part of this whole thing. is anytime we speak about unifying people, anytime we speak about echad, we always think about the big echad, the big one, the unity, the oneness, the uniqueness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the idea that we have a melech down here that will somehow be comparable. Shecholak mikvaydai lebasar v'adam, Hashem shared of his honor with flesh and blood. The king's job is to unify the people, to make them goyachad ba'aretz, to correspond to Hashem alekeinu Hashem echad. That's the job of the melech. That's the job of the melech HaMashiach, to bring people together as one for the day when Hashem is one. You know, clearly and vividly one. Yeah.
How later on in history, if this really should have cemented it, the whole idea of one king, did Israel split off into two kingdoms? I mean, wouldn't that have been like a obvious reference point to say, you know, it's one king, we don't need to...
Correct.
A northern king or something.
We didn't. And it was, you know what actually made it that they split into two kingdoms? So on the one hand, we know that the root of it was a failure, that when Shlomo HaMelech married the daughter of Paro and others, you know, in his involvement with other nations around, so he brought things into the Jewish people that were foreign. In other words, they didn't come in and accept Yiddishkeit completely. Right? She served Avodah Zarah, whatever it was. She brought in certain other aspects. But the way it expressed itself was when the son of Shlomo HaMelech, Rechavam, was approached by the people, and they said, you know, the tax burden that your father placed upon us was very heavy, and he had two choices. His older advisor said, listen to them and show them that you're with them and you're for them and you're not for yourself. Relax the tax burden. It's the best investment that you can make. You'll have the people. But his young whippersnapper advisor said, if they think they can push you around, you're going to be finished. You got to show them who's boss. And they advised him, and he went ahead and he said to them, if you think the taxes were high in the days of my father, my middle name is Obama. Okay? Sorry. He says, I'm going to make the taxes much, 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 much higher, much, much, much greater. So therefore, so what happened? So they broke off. Why did they break off? Why did they break off? They had a sense, right, that the king was not about them. The king was not about them. So that was what caused Klal Yisrael to split into two. And of course, that splitting into two is disastrous. That splitting into two happened in the same place that Yosef's brother sold him. It happened in Shechem. We see this as a basic break in Am Yisrael Goyachad Ba'aretz, in the unity of the Jewish people. It's anathema to everything that we want to have. Everything that we dream of for the Jewish people. So again, Korach is thinking this big picture of everybody together, but it is critical, it is essential that there has to be one that stands up amongst the from the rest, and that somehow all the rest is going to be galvanized around that. Now Maral says here a beautiful, elegant thing, very much kefi darkai, and he says, remember last week we learned about the name of Moshe, right? Remember? Moshe Rabbeinu somehow stood between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between the heavens and the earth, and so his name is composed of those things. He's the middleman. His name has the Mem, which is the middle. His name has the Shin, which is the high, the top letter. Actually, it's the second to top letter, because V'techasreu me'atnei elikim, he was just short of the wisdoms of Hashem. And on the other hand, he had a hey in his name, because he was from the, starting from the bottom, he was from the earth. He wasn't an Aleph, because an Aleph is the elements, and he wasn't a Beis, because Beis is inanimate objects, and he wasn't a Gimel, because the third level is plants, and he wasn't a Dalet, because the fourth level is animals. He was, he was a human being, right? So he was on the fifth level from the bottom, right? A human being, connected to the wisdom of Hashem, standing between Hashem and the people. That's the way he explained the etymology of Moshe Rabbeinu's name. I don't know if that's the right word for it. But now he explains the name Aaron. Okay? Now he's going to explain the name Aaron. He says, what's the name Aaron? He says, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to show, what had to be shown to Korach, was the Bechira. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu said to Korach, Vayker v'yoda Hashem es ha'shalei. In the morning, Hashem will make known that which is His. Ves ha'kadosh, the Holy One, that He krive lov, to bring close to Him. Ves asher yivchar bo yakrive lov, and the one He will choose, He will bring to Him. Right? That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to make known. So says the Maharal, what are these three levels in the Pasuk? Ves asher loy, ves ha'kadosh, right? Ves asher yivchar bo yakrive lov. So he says you have to understand that in the world we had a process of continued selection. First, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the Jewish people from amongst all the nations of the world, right? That was the first Bechira. Hashem chose the Jewish people to be His. That is Asher Loi. Yoida Hashem is Asher Loi. Hashem will make known that which is His. The Jewish people, Hashem says, V'yisem li la'am, you'll be mine as a people. That's stage one. From within the Jewish people, Hashem chose Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, to serve Him. That's the second stage. Ves HaKadosh v'hikrive lov. Hikrive lov is to bring close to Him for avoda, karbon. Avoda, that's Levi. Levi is the second stage. And then, from within Shevet Levi, Hashem chose the Kayanim. Ves asher yivchar bo yakrive lov. And the one who He chooses for Himself, He brings further close to Him, the Kayanim amongst Shevet Levi. Says the Maharal. The name Aaron has four letters. Aleph is one, is the first. But then it has He, Resh, Nun. In the Hebrew alphabet, there are three stages. The first stage is singles. In other words, 1 through 9. The second stage is tens. Yud, Aleph, through Tes is the first stage. Yud is 10, 20, Chaf, Lamed, through Tzadi, through 90. The third stage is hundreds, right? The next stage of the number system. Kuf, Re, Shin, Tuf. He is the end of the first half, the middle of the singles. Nun is the middle of the tens. And Resh is the middle of the hundreds. Right? Now, how do you have middle of the hundreds? Only Kuf, Resh, Shin, Tuf. It's only four. But, right, it's at the end of, right, after Resh, you get to the middle. Says the Maharal, Bechira, the choice of something, is always from the middle, from the center of the thing. When you want to choose something that represents the whole thing, you choose from the middle. Right? The extremes, right? We choose dafka always from the middle because the extremes represent ends of it. The middle is not part of the extreme, so therefore the middle somehow brings together all sides. Right? Avram Avinu had a child who wasn't included because Avram Avinu was an extremist. He was an extremist of chesed. Right? Yitzchak was an extremist of Yira, so he had a child which wasn't included. Yaakov, all of his children were part of the Jewish people. Why? Because Yaakov, you know, was Emes, which we understand as truth, as the harmony of extremes. So when you're dealing in the middle, there's nobody who's off of the fringes. You have to occupy the middle, and then everything in that sense will go along. Everything will be part of it. Everything will be included. The Bechira is in the middle. We speak about Eretz Yisrael as being the center of the world. Right? Don't ask me how that works. Right? There are theories about how that works geographically. Right? The Kuzri writes about it and others. Right? But how that works geographically. But Chazal called it the tabur, the belly button, the navel, the center from which everything else would radiate. And Yerushalayim is considered to be the center of Eretz Yisrael. And the Beis HaMikdash is the center of Yerushalayim. That's why we speak about it, because those are all Bechiros. Hashem chose Eretz Yisrael from all the lands, chose Yerushalayim, and He chose the Mikdash. That's the Mokam Asher Yivchar Hashem, that Hashem chooses. When you're choosing not to exclusion, you're choosing something which would be considered the unifying middle. Aaron represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu choosing. Well, there's a whole picture. You're right, Karach, there's a whole picture. But Hashem has made choices. And those choices are choices that somehow are supposed to be choices from that which will bring it all together. So Aaron represents the Reish, the hundreds, is choosing from amongst all the nations of the world, the Jewish people. The Nun is choosing from amongst the Jewish people, the Levim, and the Hay is from choosing amongst the Levim, Shevet Levi, the Kohanim. Hey, there wasn't a separate tribe called Levim, had one job, and another job, tribe called Kohanim. Kohanim are a subset. The Kohanim are B'nai Levi. There are places where Kohanim are called Levim, as the Gemara says. As Chazal say, Rashi brings, there are certain places where Kohanim are called Levim. They're part of Levi, but yet they're Levi select. Right? Levi select. Right? It's not a frequent flyer club. Right? But then, you know, that's the idea. They were chosen from the middle of it. They're all Bechiras. That's Hey Nun Reish, or Hey Reish Nun. Don't ask me why his name is an honor, right? Or whatever it is. I don't know why. And the Maharal doesn't address it, at least here he doesn't address it. Right? But it includes all of those elements. What's the Aleph? Because amongst the Kohanim, there's also Aaron. And Aaron is the head Kohen. Now, there, it's Aleph. Says the Maharal. Why isn't it the middle? Why isn't it the middle? So says the Maharal. Excuse me. Va'alef sheyesh b'shem Aaron, shu kohen gadol, kohen ha'reish al ha'kohenim. He was the head kohen. That's why it's an aleph, because aleph is at the head. But he says that's not called a bechira. Ki ma shenivchu ha'kohenim n'alvim hu shem acher legamrei. A Kohen versus a Levi is a completely different thing. A Levi versus a Yisrael is a completely different thing. Yisrael versus the Umas Eilam is a completely different thing. A Kohen Gadol is a Kohen Gadol. You understand? It's not, there's a separate title called, I don't know, the Puba. Right? He's the Kohen Gadol, he's the Grand Kohen. Right? A Kohen is not a term which is used for a Levi. It's a term for itself. A Levi is not the term which is used for Yisrael. Yisrael is not the term which is used for the Messiah. It's an exclusionary choice. Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, is a Kohen who is Gadol Me'achav. So yes, he's above them. But on the other hand, he's not excluded from them. That's the position of the Reish. That's the position of the Reish. Ulefikach b'shem Aaron is Aleph. That's the way the Maharal explains. Now, I could struggle with this a little bit. I could struggle out loud with it a little bit, right? Which is that because the term which is used here, bechira, over and over again, is about Aaron in the pasuk. You know, Eis Asher Yivchar Bo is to show Aaron HaKohen from amongst the rest. The term Bechira is about Aaron. But on the other hand, you see, Aaron is not at the Kohen Gadol. Aaron is as the Kohen. See, this, what we have over here, was a challenge to the choice of Aaron HaKohen, period. Right? Kayach wasn't even a Kohen, you understand, he was a Levi. Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, Rav Lochem B'nei Levi. Aaron here, when we're speaking about Aaron as the Kohen Gadol, it's not really about Aaron as the Kohen Gadol. One could say, I believe this is what the Maharal would say, although he doesn't speak it out clearly enough for me to see. It was Aaron as the progenitor of all the Kohenim. You understand? Meshuna hi kohuna gedayla shel Aaron mikol shar kohuna is gedaylos. The high priesthood of Aaron was different than any other high priesthood. The children of Elazar, the Kohen Gadol, were not fundamentally different in any which way than the children of Isamar. Oh, they might have had first dibs to succeed him as the Kohen Gadol, but fundamentally they were the same. But Aaron gained the kahuna that would be inherited forever to his children. Right? So he was not just the Kohen Gadol, like any other Kohen Gadol in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. He was the progenitor of all the Kohanim. He represented the Bechira of the Kohanim altogether, which was the beef of Kairach. Oh, of course, his beef extended to Aaron, why are you the top banana? Right? Why are you different than anybody else? But nevertheless, that aspect of being Kayin Gadol versus the other Kayanim, we never really find contended. Do we ever find a machlaikas that the Kayanim were arguing why Aaron gets to be the Kayin Gadol? No. They understood there had to be somebody on top. Right? Levi argued because of the exclusionary nature of it. And remember, what does it say about a melech? It says about a melech that he is Asher Yivchar Bai. There's a bechira for a melech. A king isn't just the aleph. He's not just the aleph. He's more. Okay? So it's a little bit of a balance here. Because when we speak about one kayin gadol, right? We're speaking about the kayin gadol versus the other kayanim. And yet he's making a difference between the choice of the kayin gadol versus the kayanim versus the choice of the kayanim versus the levium. Right, but this is to some degree the idea where the conflict lies, where the issue lies. So the Bechira, so let's, you know, to summarize, the idea over here is that Kerach looks at everything and he says, come on, let everything be here. And the answer to Kerach is no, there has to be something central. There has to be something chosen. It can't go to everybody at once. There is something, just like there's a throne in Shamayim, which is, there's a uniqueness to that. Notice the throne. Notice, we do have to all orient ourselves around a single power. And that has to be also on different layers of society and the structure of kingdom, of the giving of Torah, of tzitzis, of mezuzah. It has to be that way. And Aaron, in a sense, represents that bechira. The name Aaron, just as the name Korach, okay, we don't know the tricks of the letters, right, at this point, right? But Korach means a split. Aaron means a choice. Aaron means a choice. He's the choice, he's the select one, and we know it about Aaron. Because as much as Kairach means argument, Aaron is characterized, we say, be a student of Aaron. Why? Because he was the lover and pursuer of peace. I have shalom, right of shalom. Right? Right? So the Maral explains in Pirkei Avos, right, the idea is because Aaron represented that one that was supposed to be for all of the Jewish people together. So it's essential to his task that he be one who brings the Jewish people together. That's why we call him the lover and pursuer of shalom, of peace. Because he has to bring the people together. Otherwise, his mission is meaningless. The bechira of the emtsoi, the bechira of the middle one, is the one that allows all of the rest to be able to be a part of it. Right? The extremes polarize. They can't allow others to exist. The choice of Aaron is from the middle. From the middle. Okay. Please.
The choice of the letters of Aaron, you say, represent the Kohanim, the Levim, and the Levim. I didn't get that connection. Why those letters?
Because there are three levels of choice. The levels of choice from the broadest, which is Israel amongst the nations, to the more narrow, a tribe within the Jewish people, the Levium versus the rest, and then within the tribe, which is the Kohanim versus the rest of Shevet Levi, right? The descendants of Aaron HaKohen versus all the other descendants of Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. So the three letters, Hey, Resh, Nun, are middle letters chosen from the middle of the hundreds, the tens, and the units that we have in our number system of the Aleph base. So on each level, from the broadest to the narrower and narrower, we're choosing the middle as a representative, right? This is how the narrowing choice of Aaron is. He's of the Jewish people, who's chosen from amongst the nations. He's of Levi, who's chosen from amongst the Jewish people. And he's from the Kohanim, who are chosen from amongst Shevet Levi.
Okay, I got that. I was just wondering if there's some other connection of the specific letter to
the middle. The middle. Each one sits at the middle of its tier.
Huh? A for those are interchangeable.
No. Oh no, I think he's saying it because broader. In other words, the resh is from the nations because you're dealing with the broadest sphere,
okay.
And the hey and the nun is from the next level, from the Jewish nation, and hey is within the tribe. It's from the smallest sphere.
Okay.
That's the way he has it.
So rough cut is hollow in the middle.
Did I cut my chalf in the middle? No. Why? Because of that? I'm not familiar with that.
I only heard of cutting from the fat of the bread for like muffin stuff.
This is from the place where it's most baked.